Perfect.
Perfect. I saw this cartoon years and years ago. In it, there's a cashier's window. It says cashier above it. Inside the window is a woman, has her hair up in a bun, dark clothes, kind of a stern look on her face. And there's a guy in a suit, set back in the 50s, man in a suit with a fedora, and he's come up to the cashier's window and he's holding out a $10 bill and he says, "Change, please." And in the next panel, she has on this bright polka dot dress and her hair is up in a bouffant and she's smiling brightly and his suit has stripes in it and he says, "Thank you." So much to be thankful for. The change is instantaneous, but over time, as I've thought about, I love that cartoon. When I was like, I was 8 years old. I laughed out loud when I first saw it. And it's come back to me. And I started wondering, how did the change happen? Like, did she go back in the back room and come up with some new clothes? Or maybe she's like Wonder Woman and she just like spins around and everything changes, right? Maybe she just changed her clothes right there. I don't know. In the cartoon, the change is instantaneous. It's just a thin black line. But this is a time of change here in the fellowship. The first panel of the congregation is when Megan was the minister. And the second panel will be sometime after your next settled minister comes. But what happens in between? It's the interim. And I'm in transition. I was out seeking a congregation, did not find a perfect match. And so I said, well, I'm going to have to go find a congregation to serve at least for a year. And I'm very happy that I ended up here. But you all and I, we're all in transition. We're all in the space of interim. I summarize the tasks of interim ministry as looking back, and then looking around, and then looking forward. But basically what I'm saying is, let's make something good of this time. Let's take advantage of standing in the threshold. Not just feeling uncomfortable, but noticing what we can do, how much we can do, what power there is for us. We can step across into the next panel with wisdom and great accomplishments. As he's saying, we forget sometimes to just look around and see all that we can be thankful for. Perhaps that's just what we need to do. The word interim comes from a Latin word for meanwhile or temporarily. We think of interims as short terms. However, the German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer used the Latin phrase ad interim, in the interim, when he said, most persons discover when they look back on the whole of their life that they have the whole time been living ad interim. And they're surprised to see that that which they let go by unregarded and unenjoyed was precisely their life, was precisely the expectation of that which they had lived. In my interim ministry training, we explored the idea that all ministry really is interim ministry because everything is always changing. Sometimes those of us in the middle of our life and our middle-aged years tend to get this sense that everything's just sort of going along. There's problems that come up, different problems each year, but we kind of get stuck in the sense that nothing really big is changing. And yet, if we pay attention, not only eyesight and joints, but everything is changing all the time. Things are becoming different. Human culture right now is full of change. It's full of change at a global level. All the established patterns are running into each other. And the conservative part of the human mind is becoming reactionary with fear, and others are pushing harder for change in the face of that reaction. And in our own lives, all changing. Always experiencing change. Individual, we may think we know where we're going. We make all our plans and assumptions, and then the world and other people and illness and good luck or bad luck or accidents or change or some chance meeting, the choices, the tides and time, they all cause us to change. And suddenly we find ourselves ad interim, in between things. Resist change. That's one response, is to just try to focus on what we think is permanent and ignore the time of transition. I heard of a man in a barber shop. He was cutting some guy's hair, and he goes, you know, things never change. People never change. Nobody ever learns anything. And the man is kind of arguing with him, and he goes, oh, let me show you. And he calls his grandson, who was playing over there. He calls his grandson up, and he said, grandson, little kid, little boy, maybe about six. And he says, I got in my arm. He takes out a crumpled dollar bill, and he puts out the dollar bill, and he's got two shiny quarters. And he said, which one do you want? And the boy pauses and takes the two quarters. And the man said, we've been doing this since he's two. He's never learned. He never changes. He never gets smarter. And then afterwards, the man who's got his hair cut goes out and he sees the little boy eating candy. And he said, you know, son, you could get a lot more candy with a dollar bill. And the little boy says, yeah, but then I never get any more money. An interim is not simply a time to change. It's a time to look around and see where we are and make some choices. It's also known as a liminal time. The word liminal comes from the Latin word limens, meaning threshold. And remember that Ganesha in Hinduism is the lord of thresholds and doorways of every sort. Most of the time, we try to ignore those threshold spaces or just step over them while we're looking into the future. But the edges always have great power for good and ill. Liminal spaces are found wherever things are and are not at the same time. You can think about all those people who live in liminal spaces, like the dreamers. They were raised as Americans. They're American. They're part of this country, and yet they're not somehow. Clearly, they are and are not. And think about all those people who live genderqueer, people who are male and female, some overlap, some place of transition. We often think of transgender people as people who are moving from one box into another box. But sometimes those people are reminding us that all of us really overlap with one another. None of us are completely in one or the other, absolutely. We're all in the liminal spaces. We live in liminal spaces. And theologically, we talk about the liminal is that which brings us closest to truth, closest to what is most holy or revelatory and free. All our usual comforts and conventions, which are so very useful and central to us, dissolve away. And they stop being barriers between what us and what really is. And we suddenly need to find what it is that actually does endure beyond all those assumptions. In Buddhist thought, I think that the ultimate liminal space is bardo. Now, before I go any further, I want to tell you that though I do practice Buddhist meditation, of Vipassana meditation every day, I have sat with Buddhist groups for years, I can speak clearly about Buddhist thought, I am not a Buddhist, unless you spell Buddhism with two U's. And I can tell you Hindu stories, I understand the culture and the religion of India fairly well, as I have known people and immersed myself in it, but I am not a Hindu unless you spell it with two U's. So I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister. And its most literal bardo, most literal understanding of bardo, is that place where we are in between incarnations. When we die, we go into bardo, which is a state and a place, and then we reincarnate it out of it. Sanskrit term is antarabhava, means intermediary state, and bardo is a Tibetan word. It's purely Tibetan because of the Tibetan culture. And the famous Tibetan Buddhist writings, the Book of the Dead, informs us that bardo is a state of both of great danger, but also it's the place where we have the greatest opportunity for enlightenment and awakening. It's not an afterlife. It's the in-between life, place to look around, to see what we really are. Once a friend of mine expected to get a job. She was certain she was going to get this job. It was in springtime. She was getting ready for it. So she was so busy thinking about that, she did not plant her garden. And surprisingly, she did not get the job. And so that garden plot that she had nurtured for years looked like a grave. Just tried to put some things in it, some flowers. The next year, she was still looking for a job. The next spring, she was looking for a job. But that year, she decided to go ahead and plant her garden, not knowing what was going to happen, but knowing that she loved gardening. And she got the job. I think the act of gardening actually made her more grounded, both figuratively and literally. And then, when she got the job and she was moving, she had all these vegetables to give away as parting gifts to her friends. Personally, I don't think of Bardo as a literal place, but it could be a garden. I don't think of it as a literal place anymore than I think of literal heavens or literal hells or spirit realms or purgatories. In Christianity, the closest thing to Bardo, the closest parallel, would be the time from when Jesus appears to Mary until his ascension, but that's really another sermon. In the story that I told you today of Ganesha, the time between Shiva's realization that he has made a terrible mistake to the time when he establishes, names Ganesha, and makes him the head of all the Ganas, that's the Bardo state. It's a state in which Shiva is in horrible ruin and disaster, and yet he's still the savior and creator of the universe. Right? Ganesha, the guardian. The guardian's gone and is dead, and yet is not really. They're all in between. Everything is in flux. Bardo is not simply out there. It's not an odd once-in-a-lifetime or once-between-lifetime states. No, we are always in the Bardo. We are always between panels, between the way things were and the way things will be now. Now is the time of change. In the story, Shiva and Parvati both have expectations that are overturned. And there are always times in life when our expectations are unraveled and we do not know what is coming next. And if you're not prepared for these times, it's very disturbing. Expectations cause a lot of suffering. And these times are many. One of the most difficult I've seen often is that moment when someone realizes that they're seriously ill, but they don't have a diagnosis. And they start going from doctor to doctor and they don't have a diagnosis. And then the diagnosis comes. It's like that stage, that state where they knew exactly what was wrong and yet they didn't know what was wrong. And they knew that they were ill and then they didn't really know if they were ill. That Bardo state, it's hard to go through unless you're prepared for it, unless you have some practice that grounds you. The writer Richard Rohr describes Bardo like this. Richard Rohr said, "It's when you have left the tried and true but have not been able to replace it with anything else. It's when you are between old comfort zone and a possible new answer. If you are not trained how to hold anxiety, how to live with ambiguity, how to entrust and wait, you will run, you will do anything to flee this terrible cloud of unknowing." Some people, when they are faced with Bardo, try to change as little as possible. Another possible response is to be as aggressively active in changing things as a way of taking charge and feeling that you're in control. I know of a congregation that was so open to change that anytime someone gave a proposal, they would immediately form a task force to set up a study group that would carefully lay out all the possible costs and advantages and then make a recommendation to the board who had to decide about possible responses. I knew another congregation that would just change anything all the time, every time. Let's try something new. And of course, nothing ever worked. Neither of these is what Buddhists would call a skillful response. There's ample evidence that if a congregation is conscious about using an interim wisely, when they call the long-term minister, when they call a settled minister, that relationship will be more powerful, will be more enduring, will be more productive. And there are three things you need to do if you're going to take advantage of an interim. They come from a seminal 5 points in a seminal book on interim ministry, but I've just adapted them and simplified them. Look back first to revise and claim the past. Second, look around to see what your powers are, to see what your strengths are, to see who your people really are, to find your allies. And then the last is to look forward. To think of your heritage and history first, and then look forward. And let go of the past. And claim the losses. You've had an ending. Accept that ending. Be very conscious of what it means. When I got to St. Louis, I served in St. Louis for many years, and when I got there, there had been the previous minister who had served for 27 years, Earl Holt, his shadow was still in the congregation. And I was at a meeting after worship one Sunday, and my wife was waiting for me in my office. And this guy came in, and he said, "Is the minister in?" And she said, "Oh no, he's in a meeting." And he began to tell her this story about how almost every Sunday, sometime after worship when everybody was leaving, he would come in and he would sit down with the minister and he would share a glass of scotch and a cigar with the minister. And Amy said, "Thomas has never smoked in his life and he doesn't like scotch much. He's more likely to take a walk with you than enjoy a cigar with you." And the guy was crestfallen. He'd never really let go of the past. He'd never admitted that the past will not be recreated. It will be different. Things will change. So this is our chance to look back first, and then we'll start looking around, and I'm going to do that work with you, and then we'll look forward. After months of this ministry, if we've looked back and looked around well, we will be ready to see the future with more clarity and more openness of spirit. I have a sense of this congregation that you've already done that first stage well, that Megan helped you, Reverend Megan really helped you be prepared to let go and to move forward. You've already decided to form a search committee. You've moved quickly in that direction. And I'm asking the question whether that was a good decision or not. And my sense is that you know yourselves well enough. You know your community well enough to make a good decision. And then we can look forward. So here we are in the interim. Here we are in the Bardo. One incarnation of the UU Fellowship of San Diego has ended. My previous settled ministry has ended, and now the reality for all of us is not absolutely certain. It's not yet ready to be incarnated. It's just coming into being, and we do not know exactly what will happen. See this time not just as something we got to get through. See it as a potential time for liberation and revelation, great joy, intentional change, possibilities, here and now together. Let us claim the past, look around to the present, look to the future, and may round-bellied Ganesha bless our work as we do ministry with each other and for each other and together. So may it be. Thank you. Let's move towards closing of worship.